surgery for stress urinary incontinence used to be a major procedure with a long recovery time. How do the newer options compare, Dr. Levy?
Well, this is not your mother's surgery. And once again, like we talked about earlier with menorrhagia treatments, we have minimally invasive approaches that really approach the anatomy in a different way. It used to be from the top side down, we were trying to tether the urethra, stabilize it in some way with suture material behind the pubic bone. And we overdid it, we underdid it, we used different kinds of suture material, and we didn't study it very well. But the development of these suburethral slings has been a fabulous improvement in the management of stress incontinence.
September 1998 changed everything. That in this country, that was the FDA release of the midurethral sling. The TVT. Rarely do we get such an opportunity in medicine to have a more minimally invasive procedure that is quicker, that is safer, that has less pain, and boosts success rates dramatically. And what we've learned is that the sling procedures are highly effective and highly durable. It's one of the most studied procedures in all of gynecology. It is the current gold standard for the treatment of incontinence.
Now, I think we need to make a clear distinction here. We are talking with the TVT and others that are available about polypropylene mesh slings. There have been midurethral slings in years past that were using a woman's own tissue, for example, as the material, or cadaveric fascia. Mm-hmm. And just like the issues we talked about with prolapse, the same things happen when you place that material in the suburethral location. You end up with some trouble in that it doesn't last very long. Women may have results for a short period of time, and then she can almost tell you exactly when it started to fail, when a stitch pulled through or the fascia just let go. So when we're talking about these wonderful outcomes, we are talking about using polypropylene mesh.
Well, since the tension-free vaginal tapes were introduced, there have been a lot of new developments in placement and design. I guess the question becomes, what evidence, what does it tell us about the different surgical approaches?
The minimally invasive mid-urethral sling like TVT is the gold standard, but the approach is far from established. In my practice, I have found that my experience with a retropubic approach has made it an already safe procedure. So I have no reason to abandon its use in favor of one of the newer procedures. But when I teach residents who may go out and have a lower volume of sling procedures to perform, I'm very quick to emphasize the potential that an obturator sling will provide a certain safety margin with regard to the structures of the suprapubic region, the neurovascular structures in the bowel, for example, and the ability to potentially do it without cystoscopy, although we do recommend cystoscopy in all slings regardless. The newest entrance into the market are the so-called mini slings. There's no passage retropubically or through an obturator space. So it has a tremendous intuitive advantage. A mini sling is an extremely small procedure. The problem is that the data is, as we speak, just beginning right. to be released. And so it won't take us very long to get better answers about it. But as of today, I still consider a mini sling a procedure only for an early adopter or someone who's really close to that literature, someone who's going to know exactly what's happening at these early stages of the mini sling. And otherwise, I would actually advise caution against their adoption today.
Well, there are so many treatments available for pelvic health problems, yet many women don't talk to their doctors about these problems. Tamara, whom we met earlier, talked about why she didn't see her doctor right away.
I used to be a very active person, and I am again, thankfully, but in between that, I just thought, you know, I'm too stressed with work, I have too much going on, I'm just not going to exercise, I don't want to run, I live in a hilly area, you know, things that were, I didn't make the connection that it was the incontinence that was really the catalyst to kind of eliminating some active portions of my lifestyle.
So, Dr. Miller, how can physicians encourage their patients to talk more about these issues?
Well, there is a bit of an art because they're resistant to it. One of the really useful tips is to use written questionnaires. written questionnaires free patients up to say what they're thinking, and it also gives them the chance to think about their problem, because so often the problem's in the background of their life. And with the written questionnaire, they have the opportunity to open up about it.
I have a questionnaire that I use in my office routinely, and I see a broad spectrum of patients. So the questionnaire has only 12 or 13 questions, and it asks a series of things with an answer that you just check. Sometimes, always a problem, and it asks, and does it bother you? So without asking a long question, she's able to just check a box and not have to talk to anybody about it. It's folded up, it's anonymous, but I can look at it and then begin to address issues. I mean, the same is true with sexual dysfunction in patients. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to raise the issue. And as a clinician, I absolutely hate it when I've spent 15 minutes with a patient, and as I'm walking out the door, she's finally gotten comfortable enough with me to say, and oh, by the way, doctor. And that's not the best time to address these issues. So having a really short screening questionnaire in the office for all patients, very helpful.
We've had a great discussion today about treatments for common pelvic health problems: menorrhagia, fibroids, pelvic organ prolapse, and stress urinary incontinence. We've reviewed the prevalence of these conditions and their effects on women's lives. We've talked about the evaluation of these conditions, medical versus surgical treatment, and the research supporting treatment decisions. So doctors, let's review the main points.
Well, obviously, Rhea, we've demonstrated that these things can happen to women at any age, that focusing on the postmenopausal woman is not the appropriate time for us to be asking these questions. Women can be symptomatic at a very young age with some of these problems, and yet they're reluctant to talk to us about them.
You know, I think that given that 1 million women will get prolapse operations in the next 3 years, and almost triple that will get incontinence procedures, I think it's our obligation to look at new technology. We cannot be afraid of looking at the new technological developments, and we have to confront the issues that are going to be present about immature data sets. That is a fact of life. You know, it was once said, keep an open mind, but just don't let your brain fall out.
I think patients are afraid to raise many of the issues we've talked about today because they're afraid of the answer, or they think they already know the answer, when in fact we have multiple different alternatives that we can offer to patients, both with minimally invasive surgeries and medical options, and the technology is continually changing. Today, after a procedure, when I have a patient come in and she's very satisfied with the results, typically, let's say, a laparoscopic hysterectomy, and frequently she will say to me, why didn't I do this sooner? 5 years from now, if I'm sitting here with this group, I want to say that patients are now saying, I'm glad I did it when I did, and I didn't wait.
Well, in closing, I'd like to thank each of you for participating in this really important discussion about optimizing care for pelvic health problems. I'd also like to thank you, the viewers. Hope the discussion today will be helpful in advising your patients and offering the best treatment options. Also, I encourage each of you to go to your computer, log on to discoveryhealthcme.com, and take the post test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free CME credit for watching this program. And if you'd like to see the program again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. The slides and references from this program are also available online. Finally, I'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program, and I'd like to thank Ethicon Women's Health and Urology for the educational grant that made this program possible. For Discovery Health, I'm Rhea Blakey. We'll see you next time on Discovery Health CME.